This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome onto this edition of the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. This is take two. I just recorded the previous intro and decided it was obscene. Happy Valentine's Day, by the way, and it wasn't supposed to be obscene. It just turned out that way. So I thought, let me rather do it again, because you never know, there might be young ears listening to this as well. I hope you are having a fantastic Valentine's Day, and that you got spoiled rotten, and that you also spoiled your special someone rotten. So Valentine's Day for me this morning has been pretty good, actually. We got the kids off to school. I got to go for a run with my wife, which was pretty cool, and then we went and had a late brunch. So it was a very, very cool morning. Unfortunately, can't do anything with her tonight because I'm being interviewed on a podcast, which is quite weird. I will send you the details. I'll tell you about it. It's got nothing to do with triathlon, by the way. So it should be quite interesting. I'm looking forward to it. That's coming up this evening. But we're going to be sharing someone's story on this episode of the Kona Edge. And I was just looking at my spreadsheet to see exactly who it is and what's happening. And I've realized that it's episode 540. Can you believe it? 540 of the Kona Edge. Man alive. We create a lot of content. But I hope you are enjoying them. I love these stories. And I love that I get to share them because obviously there are lots of sort of posts and podcasts and articles on all the professionals in the sport we love so much. But we don't get to put the spotlight on ordinary everyday age groupers like you and me. And that's what I'm hoping to achieve here on the podcast and hopefully inspire you to go on to do bigger and better and greater things. And today we get to chat to John Wilson. Fascinating story. And yeah, really excited to share John's story with you here on the podcast today. In the spotlight in the coach's corner today is MP Multisports. Their athlete coach relationship is what makes MP Multisport unique in the coaching field. Their role is to ensure the coach relationship is evident in all their coaching interactions. MP Multisport coaching involves listening first to understand your needs as an athlete, continuous analyzation by them, and implementation by you. They don't focus on mass-produced training plans or categorize their athletes because no two athletes are the same. There's more to your needs than swim, bike, and run portion of training. Too often, athletes will push through their training laps and miles but forget about the impact in other areas of their lives. To get to your goals, MP Multisport takes a holistic approach to the process, which includes the balance you have in your life, nutrition, core strength, and time management, as well as understanding those needs through communication. To find out more about MP Multisport, head over to the Coach's Corner. Just go to thekonaedge.com/coaching, or alternatively head straight through to their website. It's mpmultisport.com. If you're a coach, or if you have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured in the Coach's Corner, simply head over to that URL. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching and scroll right down to the bottom of the page to get all the details. Listening to the Kona Edge, and we head to Connecticut now to catch up with John Wilson. John, welcome onto the podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much, Brad. It's a pleasure to be here.
John, as we were chatting offline before we started the recording, we were just talking about the difference in weather, and obviously Connecticut gets a bit chilly this time of the year as we're recording it. That is a challenge, particularly if you're into Ironman. You must spend a lot of time on a treadmill and an indoor trainer.
Well, it's a mixture. I like the seasons. I don't mind the cold weather. I do a lot of biking in the winter indoors, and I use Zwift a lot. I have a kicker, and I find that to be really effective. I like it a lot, very time efficient as well. But I've also got a gravel bike, and I tend to use that in the off season. I don't do treadmills. I don't like treadmills. I much prefer to run outside. So even in the snow and the sleet and the rain, I tend to do my running outside still.
I must say, I'm with you on the treadmill. I can take an indoor trainer. A treadmill, you can have. So we're in the same boat there. I understand fully. Tell me a little bit about your sort of interest in the sport. Where did your introduction to triathlon start, and how long have you been around the sport?
I've been around a long time. I'm going to turn 60 on the 15th of January, and I did my first triathlon, sprint triathlon. I was thinking about this in anticipation of the call. It was actually back in the late 80s. Small sprint, and one thing led to another, and I think I did first Ironman in the early 90s, and it went from there. It's been an important part of my life. I really enjoyed it. I've met a lot of really nice people, traveled all over the world, and I still enjoy it immensely.
From the 80s, obviously triathlon's been part of your life, but have you always been sporty growing up? As a kid, were you interested in sports? Did you participate? What was the deal?
Yeah, I have been. I've always been an athlete. I grew up in Canada, and I did a lot of ski racing as a kid. And all kinds of other sports too. I was quite athletic, and did ski racing in college, and continued on into master ski racing, and always loved to bike. Hadn't done a lot of running and swimming, so when I got involved in triathlon, those were my limiters at first. I could do quite well on the bike, but I had to develop my skills over time and in running and swimming.
That first one back in the 80s, I think when we all get started in the sport, we remember that first race like it was yesterday. Is it still fresh in your memory? Can you remember much about it?
I can, actually. Yeah, it was it was a very different time. It was so much. It was kind of an adventure. There were all kinds of people doing it for the first time, and I can remember swimming in a wetsuit that was designed for scuba diving. I think it was about a quarter inch thick neoprene, and you got out of the water and you went through a little foot bath before you got on your bike, and it was all so different, and it was a lot of fun. I kind of missed some of that, actually. That a lot of the races now have become so highly organized, and some of the local races just can't compete anymore, and that's a shame, because those are the races that really bring people in and kind of get them hooked on the sport, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's become, and I haven't been around the sport for that long, but just seeing what I've seen, it's become very commercial, and it's a business, and I don't begrudge anyone that, but that sort of one-on-one feel seems to have gone out of the sport a bit in my mind.
I agree with you completely, and the big races are wonderful. Unfortunately, I think you've got, so many people that just build their entire season around the big races, and they, at least in this part of the world, a lot of the smaller races are really having trouble, filling out the lineup so that they can survive. We've still got a number that have, but maybe at some point too, there were too many races, I think a lot of people that might be attracted to triathlon are a little bit hesitant to jump right into one of the huge commercial events.
The step up from a sprint to an Ironman's huge. Tell me about your sort of first introduction to the Ironman distance, to the really long ones. What was the thinking about going long?
Well, it's really kind of a, I've been very fortunate around this area. There are, quite a few very good triathletes, actually. And we all kind of grew up together. And it was, hey, that half Ironman was a lot of fun. Why don't we try a full Ironman? And, a number of us went out to Ironman Canada in the early 90s. That was a big race at that time out in Penticton, and a really good race. And it was kind of a funny story. I was signed up to do Ironman Canada, and my job took me to London, England. So I had to cancel out of the Ironman Penticton that year. And it also happened to be the year that they went bankrupt. And I had applied to get a refund because I couldn't attend the race. And I got this letter from them, and they said, well, you know, we don't have any money because we've gone broke. We have recapitalized the race, and but we can either give you a free entry into next year's race, or you can go into a lottery to go to Hawaii. And I said, well, throw me in the lottery. Well, wouldn't you know it, I actually got it. And I'd never done an Ironman before. So I think that was 1993 that I was I went to Kona, and I was a little bit nervous about going out to Kona and had never done an Ironman before. And so I asked some friends. I said, "Well, you know, they've got this Ironman distance race up in Montreal, and it's about a month and a half before Kona. You know, what do you think? You think it's a good idea that I go up there and do it?" And, you know, half the people said, yeah, it's a good idea. You know, it's a big race. And the other half said, well, you're out of your mind. You know, you haven't got enough time to recover and you shouldn't do it. Well, I did it. And, you know, I didn't know anything about nutrition. I didn't know anything about anything, really. And but I got through it. It gave me a lot of confidence. I went out to Kona that year, and my time was, I think it was 11 hours and 10 minutes. And my time in Montreal earlier on had been like 11 hours and 15 minutes. So I certainly discovered that I was a pretty steady racer. but it was kind of fun. And, you know, I never got to Kona again. Various life events and living overseas and whatnot until 2004. And, you know, that was kind of an interesting story in itself on how I got back to Kona.
Tell me that story. And that's a huge gap. I mean, to do it once is great. To do it twice is fantastic. But to do it with such a big gap is pretty impressive. Tell me a little bit about that second trip to the Big Island.
Well, what happened was I you know, like everybody else, you go once, you want to go back. And, you know, having gotten there the first time, you know, sort of essentially through a lottery, you know, I really wanted to go back and earn my way there. And because I always kind of felt like, well, man, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I got to go. But I really wanted to go back and earn my way there. And of course, you know, as everybody knows, that got harder and harder and harder to do. You know, in the early days of triathlon, like, you know, you could be a weak swimmer, and if you were a strong biker and a good runner, you could still win your age group. But over time, you had to have the whole package. And of course, that's just gotten harder and harder over the years. And I was consistently, you know, finishing in the top 10 in races, but I was never getting on the podium. And I finally decided that, you know, I was self-coached. And, you know, it was in the early 2000s where people were starting to look into getting coaches, and I went that route, and it really helped me a lot. I bought into the program. I did everything they told me to do, and I went out to Ironman Coeur d'Alene and, won my age group, and I was away to, you know, off to Kona in 2004. And that was a huge, huge breakthrough for me. You know, I've been to Kona 10 times now, and I've, you know, got a good record in Kona, and you know, it was really a complete change of mindset and, in how I would train and my commitment to training. And it worked out really well for me.
That's incredible. I mean, obviously, making that shift from being self-coached to getting a coach is huge. But how much did your training change? Was it a huge shift in training, working with a coach?
It was. You know, I learned about periodization. I think you know, one of the problems I had, and you know, you see it quite often, is you know, it tended to go hard all the time, and you know, I'd compete with training partners, and you know, you're never really taking a break. And I think, you know, learning about periodization was huge. And you know, learning that, you know, slow recovery work is really important, and you know, you really should do it, and you you shouldn't go, well, I actually feel pretty good, so I'll go hard, you know. And once I bought into that, that made a huge difference. And you know, hard was hard. And consistency was huge. You know, I can remember in the very early days when we were doing this, you know, the last race of the year, you'd kind of just quit doing triathlon training at all. And then, you know, pick it up in after the new year kind of thing. And, you know, getting involved with a coach, learned a lot more about, you know, training all year long, periodizing it, strength training, all those things came into play and made a huge difference for me.
John, how have you maintained the balance of juggling a budding age group triathlon career and keeping things down at home and domestically and at work to sort of keep everything going the way it should go? I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I get asked by age groupers is how do we keep all the balls in the air? What's the secret to it?
It's a great question. And I've been very fortunate. I've had a very, very successful career. I spent my career in the chemical business and started a company in 2004, ironically, which I sold last year. So I've had a very, very busy professional life. I still do. And I travel a lot. So I have to be very, very well organized and efficient with my schedule, and I am. But much more importantly, I've been very, very fortunate with my family. They've been very supportive, and my wife has a very busy professional life of her own as an attorney. And she has always been incredibly supportive of my triathlon career, if you will. And, you know, we reach all kinds of compromises. One of the things, as an example, that we've done for years is I only sign up for races that she's interested in. So we have done a lot of destination races over the years. I think that's made a huge difference. It's one of the reasons we did Ironman Coeur d'Alene many, many times over the years is, my family loved the place, you know, so we would build a big vacation around it. It kept everybody happy. But the other thing I've always been very adept at is, on the weekends, I still get up really, really early and try to have my training completely done by noon. And the rest of the day is family time, and that's the end of it. And they tend not to. I think, you know, there's no way to ruin a good party quicker than to have a bunch of triathletes together talking nonstop about nothing but triathlon. And I've tended to avoid that. I've got a lot of great triathlon friends, but I've got a lot of friends completely outside the sport too. And you've got to have balance. And that's absolutely critical. I've seen a lot of people over the years that have ended up with marital problems, family problems, just because they don't balance it out well. And, Ironman's a giant commitment. I tell a lot of people a lot of times, hey, don't underestimate it. You know, if you really don't think you can, find a way to do 16, 18 hours a week in the for 4 months before an Ironman, be honest with yourself and, sign up for other races. You know, it'll always be there, but it may not be there for you every year. And at the end of the day, family's a lot more important than triathlon. So, you gotta keep your priorities right and your career. I've seen people mess their jobs up too over the years.
Yeah, and triathlon's not a cheap addiction to have either. So you've got to keep that career going in order to fund it.
No, that is absolutely true. It's a very, very expensive sport, and of course we've all seen those numbers of the average annual income of people that do Ironman races, and I always enjoyed a comment from Tim DeBoom years ago when he was still racing. He said, this has got to be the only sport in the world where amateurs make much more than professionals do. It's a pretty appropriate comment.
Yeah, pretty accurate as well. Well, now that you've sold your business, John, are you a professional triathlete? Is that it now? Are you retired and racing full time?
No, a lot of, you're not the first one to ask me that. I mean, that would really be wonderful, I guess. But no, I actually the company that bought my company, I'm now president of one of the divisions which my business was rolled into. So I've actually my job's actually gotten a lot more complicated. It's it's a whole new adventure on its own. So. So I'm still quite busy and you know, again, actually trying to figure out with a lot of new professional demands, you know, how to get all my training done, and it's not easy sometimes.
No, absolutely,
as everyone knows.
Yeah, without a doubt, John. As far as you mentioned how harder it's become to qualify at Kona, and age group racing is, with more people coming into the sport, it is getting harder and harder. And the age groups, as you get older and older, seem to be getting faster and faster. They're not slowing down.
No.
Is that a major sort of challenge for you as well? Obviously, you're dealing with the sort of effects of getting older and not being able to do exactly what you did when you were 20, for an example. How do you deal with that? What's the strategy to overcome that? I think it's frustration more than anything else, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it absolutely has gotten a lot harder. You know, I can remember people, like, oh, boy, I can't wait to get a bit older, you know, because it's going to be so much easier to get to Kona, and that's just not true anymore. You know, it's. You know, I did Ironman Florida in November, and you know, got my slot for next year. You know, you had people going sub 10, you know, in that race, and you know, that's kind of amazing for people in 55 to 59. Granted, it was a fast day, but still, you know, the age groups are really deep. And it's really tough. And of course, now there are fewer slots available. You know, in Florida, there were two slots. You know, and historically, there might have been four, because there were a lot of people in the age group. But with you know, allocation of slots all over the world now, it's gotten a lot harder.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just looking at the results for Kona for 2017, and the 60 to 64 winner was a 9:46. There's your point exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that was you know, there is an asterisk on that. You know, he was a very, very good pro. you know, so I at you know, when he was still racing in the Netherlands, you know, fantastic athlete without a doubt. And you know, and you do see that in a lot of the age groups. You know, you've got you've absolutely got people in all the age groups now who were former pros who want to go to Kona, and you know, that's a tough situation too. And you know, and I kind of have mixed emotions about it. You know, it's sometimes I don't think it's right, and at other times I think, hey, you know, why not? You know, it's a free world, but it does seem somewhat of, you know, there does seem to be a threat of unfairness in it, that you know, someone could you know, when you're comparing people who have got a full-time career and a family, and you know, they're struggling to get there, and you know, you got to go up against someone who spent 10 or 15 years racing as a pro, that's a tough task.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been a Kona, as you said, you've been back numerous times. What's the attraction for you? What keeps bringing you back? And I mean, it's not a, for you, obviously, it's not a one and done. You've got an affinity with that island. What makes it special?
Yeah, it is. A friend of mine said it very well one time. He goes, you know, Kona is it's about as close to an Olympic moment as any of us are going to get. And, you know, there's an awful lot of truth in that. You know, you've got a chance to go out there and, you know, really find out a lot about yourself. You know, Kona is a really, really tough race. You know, it's not that there's a lot of climbing involved on the bike or on the run, but the conditions are incredibly challenging. So, you know, you have to, when you go to Kona, you know, you're getting a chance to toe the line with the best in the world, you know, and you look around at the people who are around you and you go, wow, you know, this is really amazing. Everybody did something great to get here. And, it's a really, really well event run event and, has just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. But, you know, once that gun goes off, you're on your own. And, you know, I really enjoy the mental aspect of Ironman racing. You know, how do you manage your day? How do you manage your nutrition? How do you manage your pacing? You know, you have no idea what's going to happen as the day unfolds. And, you know, something's always going to go wrong in every race. And, you know, how do you adapt to that? And, you know, the people that do really well adapt better than other people do. And, it's a race of attrition in a lot of ways. So the people that, you know, manage things the best, end up doing the best. So it's, you know, it gets a hold of you. There's no question about it. You know, I don't think I've ever met anybody that is really honest with themselves that says, oh, I just want to go there once and I'll never care about going again. I think, you know, almost everybody I know that gets there goes, I really want to go back. Mm-hmm. You know, there is something a little bit spiritual about the whole experience as well.
It's amazing you say that about the Olympic moment, because I also get that feeling about a race like Ironman, particularly if you're racing in your home country. I mean, to give you an example, if you're South African and you race in South Africa, when you're standing on that start line, you get to sing the national anthem, and it's the same if you're racing in the United States. They play Star Spangled Banner. If you are in the UK, they play God Save the Queen. And we grow up, and I grew up going to sporting stadiums, watching my sporting heroes, and they would line up at the national team, sing the national anthem. And doing an Ironman, as an average person, you get to sing the national anthem where you're the sporting event. People are there to watch you participate as an ordinary guy or an ordinary girl. And for me, that's what makes this whole thing special. And I think Kona just takes it to the next level. Like you say, you're surrounded by people who've had to work extremely hard to get there. But even if you don't get to Kona, I think that experience in itself is worth the entry fee 10 times. I love that. And just the thought of that I'm here in this sporting event, that people are here to watch me.
Absolutely. It's so true. And, it's, you know, I mean, and you look at the emotion, that is pervasive through these races. And, you know, I just have so much respect for the people that are, you know, actually out there for a very long, long time. And, you know, you've got a lot of people that are competing at the front end, and that's a whole story in itself, of course. But, you know, the willpower and the mental fortitude for, you know, people that are out there for 16 plus hours is to me just amazing. And of course, you know, and that's one of the reasons that I think that Ironman has been so successful, you know, the whole, you know, going all the way back to the Julie Moss moment. And, you know, it still carries forward to this day where you see people that just, you know, you're really just amazed at their courage and their, you know, what they can get their bodies to do. And, you know, people that do that at, you know, whether you're at the front end or the back end, I think still when you get to the finish line, you go, wow, what an accomplishment. You know, and it's a personal thing. It's, you know, and it's something that'll never leave you. I think it gives, you know, racing in these events, you know, it affects people in their professional lives. It gives them, in the sense that it gives them confidence that they can accomplish anything. Yeah. I've heard a lot of people talk about that over the years.
Yeah, it's amazing you talk about the professional life. My brother is a corporate boy. I do some weird things work wise, but he's told me in job interviews often they'll get a resume across his desk and he'll flip through it and someone's done an Iron Man and he goes, there's something about this guy. He sticks things through and it's great to have things like that on a resume. It's not going to affect what you do for a living, but it definitely does show that you see things through and you've you show a bit of commitment.
It's absolutely true. I totally agree with you. I think it's athletes tend to make great employees in a lot of ways because they're adaptable, they're competitive, they want to win, and I think when you see that someone's actually done an Ironman, it's always intrigued me when I've been looking to hire people as well.
And they take less sick days too, I'm sure.
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
John, how many more of these do you think you've still got in you? Are you going to be one of those guys that racing as long as you can?
That's a good question. And I'd like to certainly continue to race as long as my body will hold up and allow me to do it. And I've been incredibly fortunate over the years. I must have come from a good genetic pool, which I know I did. But I've been relatively injury free. I've changed my training a lot more in the last 5-6 years, where strength training has become more important, flexibility training. I do notice some of the effects of aging on balance and things like that. So, I really would like to continue to race. Do I continue to race Ironman distance, over the long, the longer term? I could definitely see the sunset coming, as far as Ironman racing goes. This is a huge year for me. Getting to freshly into the 60 year old age group, I'm really going to work hard and harder than ever to try to do something big in Kona this year. But beyond that, I'll have to wait and see. My wife kind of laughs. She goes, "You're never going to stop." we'll have to see. I do really enjoy it, and I'm almost afraid to make that comment and then turn around and sign up for another race.
you've at least got to go back every time you age group up. That you have to do.
There you go. Yeah.
Once every 5 years is doable, I think. John, it's been amazing catching up. I look forward to talking a little bit about your individual disciplines, but we'll save that for the next one. Thanks for taking the time to chat to us today.
It's been a pleasure, Brad. Nice talking with you, and belated Happy New Year to you, and good luck. I saw some things on the on social media about the number of people who are downloading your podcast, and that's great. Really fun to see somebody building a business.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I'm guessing that the Kona Edge is not the only podcast you listen to. If you're anything like me, you probably listen to a ton of different podcasts. I think at the moment I have 10 or 15 go-tos that I listen to every single week. And if you listen to a lot of podcasts, at some stage you've probably thought about starting your own. Well, the good news is it's easier than you think. ThePodcastingAcademy.com is giving you the opportunity to get your own podcast started right now. The Podcasting Academy is a 21-day, step-by-step online program that will get you from zero to podcast in just 3 weeks. Right now, thepodcastingacademy.com is offering listeners of the Kona Edge a 25% discount. All you need to do is use the word Kona at checkout to qualify. Head over to thepodcastingacademy.com to find out more. And that's it for another edition of the Kona Edge. I was joking yesterday and the day before, actually, that I said I wasn't feeling the iTunes love. Well, I've been overwhelmed by iTunes love. If you haven't left us a review yet, please do. But go on in from Dave Fletcher. And I love Dave Fletcher's Twitter handle. I'll tell you what it is in a mo. I think Dave's got an incredible story. But Dave's saying, learning so much from this podcast. Cheers, Brad. Hopefully, with great advice I'm soaking up, I'll be able to qualify for Kona at my first Ironman 10 this year. Being the five-time cancer kid I am, anything is possible. Dave, that is phenomenal. I mean, I don't know much about you, but that Twitter handle just says everything. And I'm going to put out a deal here. You qualify and race on the Big Islands. I want first dibs on the first interview. So there you go. I'd love to find out a little bit more about your story, man. It sounds absolutely incredible. And congratulations on all that you've achieved. I checked out your Twitter handle and I see you've entered Ironman Bolton. So, good luck. Let me know if there's anything we can do to help you at the Kone Edge. If you haven't left us a review yet, please do. And like Dave, leave your Twitter handle or Instagram handle and we'd love to send you a shout out on social media. So it literally only takes a couple of minutes, bumps us up in the rankings and helps increase our numbers here on the Kone Edge. So thank you in advance. And a virtual high five to you, and a massive virtual high five to you as well, Dave. Thanks for that iTunes review. We're back again tomorrow with another edition. We're going to be talking some swimming on the next edition of the Kona Edge, and we'll be touching base with Jen Kenny once again. We shared her story last week. Jen's got some amazing swim tips, and you don't want to miss that tomorrow. So that's all coming up on the next edition of the Kona Edge. From myself, Brad Brown, you have yourself a brilliant Wednesday. If you are heading out for Valentine's Day this evening, I hope you have a very romantic one. Until then, from myself, Brad Brown, cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.